I think, Professor, that I agree with you. And so my question would be, when do you think that science, physics, as it were, you know, hardcore physics, is going to meet up with metaphysics? At some point, if what you're saying is true, the two are going to discover each other.
It's happening now, Art. As far as I can tell, it's happening now. The reason I'm saying this is the fact that the current trend in physics today, in papers today, is leading into a more abstract, less material-based worldview than was even conceivable 20 years ago. There are Nobel laureates in physics today who made remarkable discoveries in electroweak theory, as people like Sheldon Glashow, and there that have confessed that these new ways of thinking that are being developed today, we call it string theory or membrane theory. There's many different languages for it.
Right.
These guys are confessing, we don't understand what you new physicists are doing. You're coming up with ideas that have no experimental verification ability at all. And yet, they seem to be providing a basis for what we call reality. As we peer into that more deeply, and we begin to try to unite all the fields, we're going to find that, this is my prediction, this is what I see happening, we're going to find that's one part of the equation that's missing, which is called consciousness. And this is where, you know, I see is inevitable. I'm not the only one thinking this way. There are a number of physicists that are thinking like this. Roger Penrose,
yes,
who's written a number of books about this, is thinking this way. Brian Josephson, Nobel laureate, thinks this way. Even Stephen Hawking is beginning to think a little bit more about information and its respectful place in the physics community.
Professor, there's work going on at Princeton, right?
Yes.
Consciousness work.
There has been. I'm not sure what's going on right now. I haven't kept up.
Whatever. Anyway, they had or have computers scattered around the globe they call eggs that report back to Mama Computer at Princeton, and they've discovered this correlation between world events like 9/11 and these sudden spikes in non-random activity of these so-called eggs, computers planted in different physical locations. And that would seem to me a place where physics and science and metaphysics are colliding and discovering each other, perhaps.
Well, there's certainly some indication that if you get something complex enough, it begins to exhibit some of the elements of what we would call conscious behavior. So that fits in very well with many of the current biodiversity type guys, the evolutionary biologists, that if things are complex enough, then they will begin to show intelligence. Now, I'm saying there's something more that's still needed here. That's not enough. There's something else that's needed, and that is the ability to form pictures that we call selves. Like I see myself as Fred Alan Wolf talking to Art Bell. Why isn't it just one man, one voice, one person, one entity, including all the listeners on millions of Arthur? Why aren't we just one mind? Well, if we are just one mind, how do we get these different separate egos or selves that arise? To me, that is an interesting question that's not immediately obvious. It was taken to be immediately obvious until we began looking at quantum physics and began realizing that the assumption of there being separate minds is really fraught with a number of paradoxes that cannot be explained until you begin to look at the idea of one mind which projects itself as separate minds rather than separate minds which have no relationship with each other at all.
Wait a minute. One mind that projects itself as many, millions, even billions of separate minds?
Yes, but they're all like reflections
of
the one mind.
Is that like the concept of God?
It is getting there. We're getting close.
I remember, Professor, maybe you'll consider this elegant or maybe just trash. I don't know. But somebody came on the program a few years ago and just almost put me to my knees by saying that, you know, what God did was blow himself up. We were talking about the Big Bang.
Yes.
And God, in effect, blew himself up. Or perhaps you could after listening to your words a few moments ago, it sort of sounds similar in a way. God, instead of one mind, created all of these supposedly separate minds, but it's all one God mind.
Yes. Now, that's close. Now, I'm going to be as presumptuous as I can possibly be and speak for God for a moment and say, what did I as God do? First of all, I exist in a timeless, spaceless, matterless realm of non-being, non-existence, non-material, neither sun nor moon, neither star nor planet. I exist in this realm mm-hmm. with basically nothing to do. Mm-hmm. But I'm there, and I'm conscious, and I'm going to be this way for all eternity. As far mm-hmm. as I can tell, there is no time for me to even measure eternity. It's constant. Everything is constant now for me. And I create something. And in that creation, it's a huge explosion. It's the most chaotic, violent event, as one of your listeners was talking about before. You can even imagine the Big Bang.
So you did this out of what we would call loneliness.
Loneliness, boredom, whatever you want to call it, I don't know. Desire, the first inkling to make something like this happen. We can speculate about that all we want, but what's important to me is the mechanisms that start to result as a result of this desire or this loneliness that arises. Mm-hmm. The Big Bang is a violent, terribly violent thing, and if it left to its own devices and its own quantum mechanics and everything else, it would just continue to expand into all these possibilities with nothing ever really reaching any fruition at all. No actual matter would even appear. Nothing. It would all be probability clouds. But suddenly, or at times, or constantly, I'm going to enter into this game, and I'm going to nudge. I'm going to nudge this. I'm going to, you know, tinker with it as it goes on, just like a good quantum physicist would do in a laboratory. I'm going to tinker with this thing. And
That sounds like Q from Star Trek, tinkering.
It is Q. It's Q from the Star. It's Q from the word go. I'm going to tinker with this thing. And in tinkering with this thing, suddenly things are going to start structurize. That is, electrons are going to appear. Oh, now we're getting photons. We're getting quarks coalescing. We're getting strings coalescing into quarks. We're getting particles. And now electrons and protons are beginning to form hydrogen atoms. And the electron, in order to form a hydrogen atom with a proton, has to go into a quantum cloud of possibility. And now we're getting to form helium atoms, and now helium and hydrogen are beginning to, squeeze together under their own self-gravitating space-time distorting mechanisms, which are already inherent in the Big Bang itself, and they're producing stellar materials, which we call stars or suns, and some of them are big and some of them are small. Some of them live a short time, some of them live a long time.
Sounds a lot more complicated than Let There Be Light.
Oh, boy. And yes, not only is it complicated, but there's no way that you can explain any of that based upon any common sense understanding of the laws of the evolution of the universe.
And,
it ain't mechanical.
And sure enough, everybody you ask about that 1 second before the Big Bang, well, they just sit there mostly, right?
Right. Well, there's nothing you can say. And I'm going to say that nothing. And, you know, people may want to argue about it. That's good. We can get people thinking about what's going on before the Big Bang. We're now beginning to look at things from a timeless, spaceless, unoriginated, unformed, unborn form, which is the place that I believe consciousness really resides.
Anyway,
we're still there.
Yeah, anyway, Professor, you're saying there had to be an original and, add lonely, consciousness.
Absolutely.